Well, good afternoon and welcome to the final session of Sunstone Today. This is the panel 376, The Expression of Spirituality in the Rising Gay Generation. And I want to thank you all for coming. We can go ahead and get started. I'm assuming people keep wandering in for a few minutes. My name is Olin Thomas, and I have been Executive Director of Affirmation, Gay and Lesbian Mormons, for the past 5 years. Just a little background about myself. My family converted to Mormonism when I was 8 years old, and I came out while in college at Virginia Tech when I was 23, shortly before being commissioned a lieutenant in the U.S. Army. I did not serve a mission for the church due to my Army obligation and my growing realization that I was gay, which prevented me from getting a temple recommend, because I just simply couldn't face my stake president with the knowledge of what was inside me. My stake president at the time was probably a better person to cast in the role of Moses in the Ten Commandments than Charlton Heston was. Anyway, so later, I quietly faded into inactivity in the church at age 25, and a few years later began participation with Affirmation, Gay and Lesbian Mormons, which I've been steadily involved with for the last 19 years. I currently live in Alexandria, Virginia, with Sydney, my partner of 14 years, and a very spoiled pug named Lollipop. I will allow each panel participant to introduce themselves as they begin their own portion of the presentation, which is unlike some of the other panels here. So, you know, that's how we'll handle it today. Okay. I am curious, just before I get started, how many of you in the audience feel you already know a lot about affirmation, what affirmation is and so forth? Okay. So there's some of you that don't. And so I'm just going to do a little bit of a brief background, and then the purpose of my part of the presentation is to set up some sort of a structure or framework for thinking about spirituality. Although I think I'm a youthful 46, I'm not obviously of the rising generation. I'm more of the established generation, and so that's going to be covered by the younger members of the panel. Affirmation is a coalition of chapters and members at large with an all-volunteer executive committee, individuals, and ad hoc committees that oversee public relations, our website, special activities, and the annual conferences. Though an all-volunteer group with no full-time or professional oversight, we have managed to hold 29 consecutive successful annual national conferences. I guess I should say international, because we often have someone from beyond the United States. Chapters themselves come and go as people have the energy to organize and operate them. Some have been around fairly consistently for years, such as Salt Lake City, Washington, D.C., or Portland, Oregon, and others have recently been formed, such as Kansas City or Dallas-Fort Worth. As the theme of this symposium and the topic of this panel presentation is the spirituality of the rising generation, I am going to focus on establishing some background. Three of my co-panelists will represent the rising generation directly, and I will prepare a framework for understanding the basic building blocks of spirituality when gay and Mormon. Formed very discreetly by BYU students in 1977, the organization that became Affirmation grew, then struggled, until a young man in Los Angeles named Paul Mortensen formed a chapter in 1978. In 1979, a charter and bylaws were adopted, which firmly established the current organization. Affirmation's charter states that we were organized for four reasons. I don't know if you can read them from all the way back, but I have posted them here on the front of the podium. I will read them in case you can't read them. First, to encourage spirituality, prayer, and the practice of Christ-like and charitable behavior in the recognition of members as whole and complete children of God. And let me take a tangent. It's important to remember what these are because I'm going to show how they are stepping stones to rising in spirituality. Number two, provide support for people experiencing difficulty reconciling their sexual orientation with traditional Mormon beliefs and other belief systems concerning homosexuality. Three, provide a forum for communication and education for members and leaders of the church and our peers concerning homosexuality. Four, to provide support and opportunity for social interaction, intellectual development, emotional stability, and cultural exposure with those of similar heritage and background. I especially have been drawn to this statement in our purpose article, which happens to be at the bottom of this poster on the front of the podium. Quote, "It is our intention to work for the understanding and acceptance of gays and lesbians as full, equal, and worthy persons within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and society, and to help them realize and affirm self-worth." Unquote. I have been executive director for 5 years and feel I've done a reasonable job of maintaining the organization to allow it to function and perform its basic purposes. But I feel that we, or rather I, have not fully discharged my duties as executive director, because other than making some public statements to be posted on our website, I had not reached outside my own community. How could I be working for the acceptance of gays and lesbians as full and worthy persons in the church, as it states in our purpose, or society, if I was not even speaking to members of the church or society who did not accept that premise? To this end, the last couple of years, I have been more open to publicity. Publicity is often a dirty word when dealing with Mormon officials because they don't like publicity, especially negative publicity. And Affirmation has traditionally been conscious of not doing that because many of our members that are coming in are brand new, just coming out of the church, and they have very sensitive feelings to what they view as criticism or church bashing. And so we try to avoid the appearance of that or the reality of that. Some of the things that happened, like June of last year, we had a very nice bit on National Public Radio, and this year, one on Sirius Radio. I also was on a radio news talk station in Logan, Utah recently, along with a representative of the Sutherland Institute, a public policy research group headquartered here in Utah, to debate the merits of the June 20th First Presidency letter that was read June 29th in the Californian wards, asking for support for Proposition 8. There's also been many other members featured on TV, radio, and in print, and a lot of things, especially in print, that I'm not listing here. Also, to encourage others to speak out to the larger society, in May this year, we announced the Writing Awards program focused on letters to the editor, op-ed pieces, and other similar published works, especially opinion works. Most importantly, when President Monson assumed the presidency of the church earlier this year, we formally asked him to meet with Affirmation representatives to discuss our concerns. This request was answered with an offer to meet with the head of LDS Family Services, Fred Riley, and with former Welfare Services head, Harold Brown. This meeting was supposed to happen Monday, that is, in the day after tomorrow, but has been postponed pending the appointment of a new head of Family Services. Many members of Affirmation scoffed and told us we were wasting our time, that no official within the church was going to listen with an open mind, nor change their position, so why were we even trying? Others felt that even seeking such a meeting implied we sought approval or validation from the church, and that in turn, that implied we were not confident in our own self-worth and were thus violating Affirmation's founding philosophies. But I kept asking myself this question. Would I feel good about my tenure as executive director, and thus head advocate, in a sense, for gay and lesbian Mormons everywhere, if I did not even try to reach out? If someone were to ask President Monson, why did you not speak with Affirmation members? How would it seem if he were able to honestly answer, they never asked to speak with him? So what does all this have to do with the spirituality of gay Mormons? I'll tell you, but first, let me ask you if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is a very well-known concept. Are most of you familiar with that? Okay. I see some nodding heads and hands. This is not a test. I'm not going to pick on people for questions. You probably noticed my little display aid over here, which is I've stolen from Maslow. That's in the public realm now, so I don't have to worry about any copyright violations. You're probably familiar. It talks about how people will meet their basic needs first, and then go to the higher needs. Eventually, you know, the ultimate need is the self-actualization of the human. But you have to meet the lower needs first. I mean, no one's going to worry about is there a God if they're starving to death, you know, as an extreme example. But that you have to. And there's many intermediate steps. Now, I'm going to take some liberties with this concept and adapt it for Affirmation. Perhaps we can call it the gay LDS hierarchy of needs, and that's what's posted here. The charter developed to guide affirmation set forth the steps needed to develop the member's spirituality. Those are the four purposes I read earlier. Otherwise, you know, our development could be stunted by our negative beliefs toward homosexuality, which have been essentially bred into us by long activity in the church and exposure to society. My hierarchy of need starts off at the first level, the same thing, the basic needs. Food, shelter, basic bodily function. These are relatively easily met by most people who seek affirmation out. One notable exception might be young gays who are so rejected by their families as to be forced out of the home. But the second level is social support and emotional and cultural exposure. This affirmation has excelled at. And I wanted to point out, when I say cultural exposure, I mean exposure to our own culture and our own people. And you may think there's no such thing as gay Mormon culture, but I think there is. And it's important that it's exposure to people just like yourself, gay and Mormon. From quiet study and prayer sessions to marching and pride parades to our annual conferences and all types of chapter events, we, Affirmation, have provided these opportunities. When someone contacts Affirmation, the vast majority of the time, their first question is there a local chapter where I can meet other gay Mormons? We need to socialize and have friends like ourselves. Then the next level up would be love and belonging on Maslow's hierarchy. I'm going to say that for Affirmation, that would be help reconciling sexual orientation with the traditional LDS or societal beliefs about homosexuality. Now, I have found that this is accomplished most effectively in a somewhat indirect manner within Affirmation. Once someone establishes friends who are gay and also Mormon, they can talk to them about how they reconciled or are reconciling their beliefs. More importantly, they can observe. 17th century British poet George Herbert expressed it best, in my opinion. Quote, "Living well is the best revenge," unquote. There is no better way to affirm yourself and to convey that to others than by simply living your life as it should be lived. This is the same precept that is expressed in Matthew chapter 5, verse 15. "Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light to all that are in the house." When those who have accepted their gayness and resolved to live life well and fully just as they are associate with those who have not reached that level, a light goes on in the mind of the one struggling. I can be happy and productive like them. I don't have to be in torment. In the second issue of our national newsletter ever published back in 1980, Doug Murray wrote, quote, "Unfortunately, too often the price for leaving the closet is our testimonies. The guilt and low self-esteem that many church officials would have us suffer causes an annoying dissonance that pushes us away from church involvement and many times severs relationships with family and friends," unquote. This, unfortunately, is just as true today in 2008 as it was in 1980. I have found that reconciling beliefs doesn't have a lot to do with theology and reading the scriptures. It is more coming to accept that which we want to deny, that Heavenly Father created us this way, and we are not a mistake or being tempted to sin. It is difficult, perhaps impossible, to reconcile beliefs intellectually. It is an emotional, spiritual transformation that takes place in a supportive community. The ideal circumstance for this is when the person not only has affirmation friends to support them, but when their own family also does so. Although our community is full of stories of families rejecting their gay members, it is also full of stories of families that can clearly see their child, brother, or sister is not evil or disturbed, but is a kind, loving person. All the scripture and proclamations in the world cannot overcome what an open-minded person sees before them in the flesh, that being gay and living well are not incompatible. So once we reconcile our beliefs, what then? Then it's the fourth level. Maslow calls it esteem. I think at this point for a gay LDS person, it would be communication, education, outreach. This fourth level is needed to carry the message. Now that I'm okay, I want to help others who still suffer and to educate those who doubt. It's a perfect way to build esteem. This is the point that I wanted to reach when I started this train of thought. This is why I would reach out to church leaders and officials, and reporters and media outlets. Spirituality doesn't exist in a cave. If we have lit our candle that we are gay and we're okay, we need to let it shine, not in some sort of false pride, but in the hope that those who follow will see it, and to reassure those who wonder, how can this be? In Affirmation's Charter, Article 2, Position, states simply, "We affirm that homosexuality and homosexual relationships can be consistent with and supported by the gospel of Jesus Christ." Period. That's it. That's the full statement of our position. Notice that it says can be and not are. Certainly, there are relationships of either orientation which are not consistent with the gospel. It is therefore important for our own and other spiritual growth that we shine a light on those that are. The same level in Maslow's hierarchy is esteem. He specifically mentions not only self-esteem, but the respect by others and the respect of others. This step is necessary to advance to our highest level of enlightenment, which in the fifth level in Maslow's hierarchy is self-actualization. For Affirmation, I would say that equivalent would be a spiritual practice as whole and complete children of God or Heavenly Father. Or heavenly parents, as most of us like to say now. This would be the ultimate in self-actualization. Although some individuals are no doubt there, in my opinion, this is a level that Affirmation as an organization, meaning perhaps a large portion of our membership, has not reached, perhaps due to lingering doubts about whether homosexuality is a sin or not. It's hard to believe that you're okay when family, friends, church, society, and many laws of the land are telling you you're not. But this is what we are striving for, and what we hope. This is what we're striving for, and what we hope the rising generation will achieve. What would it require? The ability to be safe and secure in a committed relationship of our own preference is one thing that comes to mind. Certainly we've heard no end of discussion about gay marriage in California. The ability to worship in our own church without interference is something else that comes to mind. Some members of our Affirmation group have been denied even the ability to sit in sacrament meeting because they were living too openly as a gay married person or as a gay individual. At this point, I'm just curious, those are two things that come to my mind. Are there things that come to the minds of any of you members of the audience that would be needed to ultimately reach that highest level of self-actualization? Any suggestions? I'm sure we can think of some later. If you can, please email me. I'd love to improve this. But to sum it up, over and over, in personal stories and essays and in talks, I have noticed that gay people and their family members will often refer to this well-known scripture of 2 Nephi chapter 2, verse 25. Adam fell that men might be, and men are that they might have joy. It is clear from the context that this is not meant in any carnal sense, not joy as fun and games or pleasure, but the joy of living life with the knowledge of God and of right and wrong, and making your own choices with that full knowledge. A dear friend and longtime Affirmation member and supporter said it best. Affirmation's greatest mission should never change. To provide a safe space for gay and lesbian or bisexual, transgendered, or intersex people of LDS background to sort out their religious, spiritual, and sexual issues without any hidden agendas or assumed outcomes. This is what Affirmation is and will continue to be. I now turn the floor over to Dave Wilson.
Thank you all. It's great to see so many of you here. I know for some of you it's been a very long day, so we'll try and keep things moving along for you. We appreciate the invitation to be able to speak today. My name is David Melson. I'm the Senior Assistant Executive Director for Affirmation. I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland. I'm a convert to the church. I served a mission in Asia. On my mission, I was openly gay. As a member of the mission staff, there were three occasions when I was called upon to counsel missionaries who had attempted suicide. because someone found out that they were gay. I have held just about every calling that you can hold in a local unit, including, and this is documented, I have been a Relief Society president. There ain't a lot of us around. When Matt Price founded Affirmation, Gay Mormons United, he said that he realized that there were four aspects of support that gay Mormons needed: psychological support, social support, spiritual support, and political support. In 30 years, these four aspects haven't changed. The emphasis of one over another has changed. The environment has certainly changed, but the four areas of support for which gay Mormons seek have remained essentially the same. The environment of the mid-70s was very different than it is today. In 1976, BYU's Board of Trustees founded the Institute for Studies in Values and Human Behavior, referred to usually as simply the Values Institute. Its purpose was to produce an anti-gay scientific book funded by church tithing monies, which would be printed on an East Coast press and made to appear as though it had no ties to the church. This would then be used as secular evidence to back up the church's homophobic stance. Other Values Institute projects were to prepare anti-gay papers and rebuttals, support academic and scientific research vindicating the church's stance on homosexuality, and lastly, to recommend to the first presidency, quote, specific steps that the church might take in combating homosexuality and other sexual misconduct, unquote. At the same time, also in 1976 at Brigham Young University, Dr. Eugene Thorne, the head of BYU's psychology department, was overseeing a PhD student named Max Ford McBride in his dissertation that involved experiments on gay men using gay and straight pornography and electric shock therapy. They started out with 16 gay male BYU students and staff in the study. They ended up with 14. Two committed suicide during the course of the study. Matt Price knew both of the men who died during the study, and their deaths were certainly part of his motivation to form Affirmation. The homophobia and the paranoia at BYU was such that no one dared use their real name when they were meeting another gay person, for fear that someone might be a spy from campus security, or worse, that if you met someone, you got to know them, and then they had a problem later and they went to a priesthood leader for counseling, that they would eventually be persuaded to list the names of all of their gay acquaintances. We know that Matt wasn't his real name. Legend has it that the standard practice of that time was to use your middle name as your first name, to use your mother's maiden name as your family name. Matt may have been Stephen Zacharias, but Stephen has also changed his name a few times, so we're not certain. This was a period where there was still academic debate going on over whether or not homosexuality was a disease. Word of Stonewall was still working its way west, and we were just starting to worry about a thing called the gay cancer, or GRID, that later became known as AIDS. Coming out in Provo was not a prudent course of action for anyone in those days, and so the needs of gay LDS were huge. During that time, and for most of the first two decades of Affirmation, once a member of the church was found to be gay, one of two things would happen. Either he or she would just sort of quietly drop out of activity, or they would be persecuted or ostracized or tortured to the point of wanting absolutely nothing to ever again do with the church. In those early days, some of the biggest advances for Affirmation came through the use of the media, a novel concept. In 1979, an article in The Advocate led to the formation of the Washington, D.C. and the Los Angeles chapters, which are now the two oldest continually surviving chapters of Affirmation and two of the strongest. The article also brought in a fellow named Paul Mortensen, who launched the Los Angeles chapter and who was the guiding force later in 1979 to a change to Affirmation's present structure and to the current name, Affirmation Gay and Lesbian Mormons. Also in 1979, Affirmation members from California and Utah joined with members from the D.C. area for the 1979 March on Gay Rights on the National Mall in Washington. And there they were interviewed on the Today Show live, giving mainstream national attention to Affirmation for the first time and to the existence of gay Mormons. A lot's changed over the last 30 years. The majority of Americans under 40 right now have no problem with social and civil equality for gay men and women. And it's not a problem in most settings to be openly gay or lesbian. Some things haven't changed. McConkie Doctrine, I think some people refer to it as Mormon Doctrine, back then was one of the best sellers on Deseret bookshelves. And in the early years, it laid out all the wisdom of the prophets, including the notion that it was better to be dead than to be homosexual. The church has a publication today from BYU Press and Macmillan. It's currently online at LDS.org, the Encyclopedia of Mormonism. They made the same mistake again. And in there, in between home teaching and hope, there's homosexuality. But if you look closer, though, most of the article was from another article that was prepared for the Ensign in 1986. Hasn't been updated. But the Encyclopedia article aside, the church has also made significant changes of late. The opening paragraph of God Loveth His Children, which is a manual for gay Latter-day Saints, states that, quote, notwithstanding your present same-gender attractions, and notice they use same-gender attractions, they can't quite bring themselves to use the G word or the H word or even the S word, you can be happy. You can enjoy full fellowship with your fellow saints and ultimately receive all the blessings of eternal life, unquote. And it may also be worth mentioning Louis B. Felt and Mae Anderson. You might remember them. Louis was a general primary presidency from the late 1800s into the 1920s. Mae, her roommate, succeeded her. They were known as the Jonathan and David as the general primary. And they were lesbians. Apparently, being gay didn't actually become sinful or evil until sometime in the 1950s. Another change that's taking place is within the membership of the church. The LDS Church is losing its controlling grip of authority over its members. We have many wards today in which openly gay church members serve in callings, enjoy full fellowship, whole temple recommends. In other wards, one can be excommunicated simply for being gay. In June of 2005, on the first Sunday of Pride Month, two men got up and fastened testimony meeting, and they bore their testimonies as gay men. They spoke of their love for the Savior, of their knowledge of the truthfulness of the Bible and of the Book of Mormon, about the great presence of the Holy Spirit in their lives and at that moment. Each of them spoke of how, as a gay man, that it was often difficult to feel safe within the walls of the church that had taught them their values and taught them to love, but how each of them felt that being sent to the earth in this day, at this time, as a gay man, may well have been the greatest possible gift the Lord could have given them. They each spoke in one man's home ward in the morning and then in the others that afternoon. In my ward, a member of the state presidency stood up after we had spoken, and with tears in his eyes, he thanked us for speaking. He thanked us for the love and the courage that was required to bear such a testimony. And he spoke of his love and admiration for us. 16 days in a court of love that meant until 2:30 in the morning, Sam was excommunicated for being a homosexual. The two wards were adjoining. Gay Mormons have changed also over the years. Gay church members in their teens and 20s today come from a far different background. Rather than a tortuous coming out experience in their late midlife after years of being trapped in the closet, today's gay adolescents and young adults come out in their early teens or sooner to a supportive network of friends and others. They haven't faced the rejection and the problems of the past, and therefore they don't see a need to have to choose between their DNA and their faith. They want and they expect to be able to choose both if they wish, to be openly Mormon and to be openly gay. This introduces a whole new set of paradigms to both the church and to Affirmation to consider, but still coming down to Matt Price's four original areas. What you're seeing today, this afternoon, right here in this session, is a shift to the rising generations of leaders in Affirmation, three of whom you're going to be hearing from in just a moment. Affirmation was started by people in their 20s and in their 30s, who are now in their 50s and 60s. Between Vietnam and AIDS, we're missing much of the generation who should have naturally evolved to take these roles. And so it's time now for the rising generation to step up and to fill that void and to lead Affirmation into the next 30 years. And in the words of the absolutely divine Bette Davis, hold on to your hats, folks. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Now, one last word, which comes from the words of Matt Price when he was departing Affirmation. He said, don't forget the work of the Spirit. I don't want to seem overly dependent on some mysterious influence as to what makes Affirmation work. But there is a real need for prayer and reflection on what we are doing, reaching out to our Father in heaven and to each other. We firmly believe that Affirmation has a place in the plan of our Father in heaven and His kingdom, and that the Holy Spirit is still with us as individuals and as a group of His children, guiding us in what we are seeking to accomplish. His Spirit is most reflected when we are working towards our goals, ever mindful of the needs of our sisters and brothers, ourselves, and the working of the Savior in our lives and in our hearts. Those words were true 29 years ago. They're true today. I thank you very much. I'd like to introduce Michael Bisson.
Hi, my name is Micah Bisson. I am currently serving as the Youth Program Director for Affirmation. In good Mormon tradition, I should have waited until the last minute to prepare this talk, but they were kind and gave me a few weeks' notice. The idea of coming out for teenagers has been an ever-evolving process for the past 40 to 50 years. Ever since the beginning of the so-called gay movement in the late 60s, the process of self-identification and coming out has changed drastically. On a much generalized perspective, each generation has faced different societal and peer pressures when dealing with their orientation. I hear many older gay people speak of the ignorance of today's youth not having respect for where their gay brothers were 40 years ago. Some 20-somethings don't know why pride parades even started, or what the significance of June 28th has. June 28th, by the way, is the beginning of the Stonewall Riots in 1969. Today's youth are coming out earlier and earlier than ever before. Please allow my indulgence while I tell you part of my story, my own personal story. I was born in the Seattle, Washington area. My parents were divorced when I was very young. My mother was active in the church, and my dad was quite anti-Mormon. The visitation rule said that I spent every other weekend with my father. I was not allowed to attend church when I was at my dad's. He tried to persuade me that the church was a cult and Joseph Smith was a fraud. I fought that notion, of course. I liked church. That's where my friends were and where I spent my time socially. When I was 12 years old, I moved in with my dad and visited my mom on the weekends. I still attended when I was at my mom's. At my dad's, the anti-church rhetoric increased, and I tried to remain faithful. My father has a very large stature and a very commanding presence, very physically intimidating. One look in his eyes, and you could tell not to cross him, or physical harm would be towards you in short order. There was no choice but to obey. I realized that I was gay in about seventh grade. The only memory I have of that realization is when I caught myself staring at other boys in the locker room after gym class. Perhaps I knew earlier, but I didn't want to make a big thing of it. I heard what other kids said, the derogatory uses of the word gay, pansy, fag, and the like. I chose to do my best to blend in. I figured when I was going to move to Denver, Colorado in the summer of 94, I could have a chance to leave that behind and be truly who I was. Well, we didn't quite make it to Denver. We entered into Elizabeth, Colorado. Population, 1,400 people. 92% of the population there graduated high school from the local high school, but less than 20% went to college. High school was a terror. I felt socially awkward. I did not have many friends. And in this rural setting, it was no place to come out. I took a summer job at Elitch Gardens Amusement Park in the summer of 95. I took a public bus that was designed for commuters, since I didn't have a driver's license. I liked getting into Denver because it was far away from Elizabeth and far away from that attitude. I could feel the level of tolerance was much higher there. It was at Elitch's that I experienced my first gay day after Pride Parade. Now, that was an eye-opening experience. especially for some naive little Mormon boy in Podunk, Colorado. Short shorts, glitter, and drag queens. Oh my! I had no idea what to think, other than I knew they were like me. And they were okay with who they were. Perhaps I could feel the same way. The biggest thing I took away from the Elitch experience was that it told me that I needed to get to Denver and participate in that community. The Mormon culture there didn't want people afflicted with same-sex attraction to be honest and open. I desperately wanted to find a place where I could be authentic to myself and to my surroundings. The only other connection I had to the outside world was America Online. This was in the days of version 2.0 for the Macintosh. For those of us back then, we didn't have the World Wide Web. We were stuck. But I really didn't like being trapped in that double life, and so I had to do something. The rest of the details, as some can say, is history. Serving time in the U.S. Army was my excuse for not going on a mission, and I ended up going 100% inactive in the summer of 2002. At this time, I started my coming out process as well, and finding a new church home has been a struggle. When you've been a Mormon all your life, it is difficult to find a good substitute. I've been asked the question, if I were straight, would I still be active in the church? The answer would be yes, probably because I didn't know anything else outside the LDS culture. My father tried at some point, but I would not listen at that time. Coming out to myself, to my family, and in general, has helped me consider the possibilities that something else is out there other than Mormonism. Otherwise, I would have never known. While active, we were encouraged not to check out any other religions. We already had made the most correct choice, and any other place would be less than the full truth. I had doubts. I have found gay-friendly Episcopal churches that I attend when I feel prompted to do so. The whole gay issue motivated me to find something else that was a better fit. As time has gone on, I have found many more doubts about spiritual matters and take a position of, I just don't know. A word that we've heard a lot lately in the United States is change. The race for the next U.S. president is basically hinging on that one word. Many of us who work in the fields such as medicine, law, and information technology are well aware of what change is and how rapidly it occurs. Like technology, society is also changing. Some places are becoming more tolerant to different lifestyles of something other than their own. From within the Zion Curtain, I think that isn't necessarily so. There have been a few steps in what Affirmation considers the correct direction, albeit small steps. The official policies are to still condemn homosexual acts, as David has just illustrated to us previously. Mormon youth are still terrified of being found out and are getting kicked out of their houses and their homes when they are found out. Thus, they suppress the feelings, and they end up with a variety of emotional issues later on in life. What they see in high school is vastly different from that of what they are taught on Sundays. Their gay peers in high school are able to be out and proud, while LDS kids can have a sensation of being stuck between their eternal salvation and a healthy and authentic existence. A significant number of youth that self-identify as bi, gay, or experimenting while in high school are being accepted by their peers. Mormon gay youth are still taught that this is evil and is something that you should work very hard to suppress. Every time I hear about another high school-aged or freshman-aged youth successfully committing suicide, it just pains me. It also makes me wonder if they were struggling with that same-sex orientation. While we never know all the reasons why they choose to end their life so young, we can speculate. There are very few reasons why a 19-year-old straight Mormon boy going to BYU preparing for his mission would have to kill himself. He has the support of everyone around him, his family, his friends, and the entire church. So I think a core reason that they could no longer coexist with their Mormon upbringing and fight the fight the church leaders have encouraged everyone to do. Affirmation and its allies exist to be a resource for all people who are gay and from the Mormon culture. We are also here for the youth as well. Our resources are open to them, and we sincerely hope that they take advantage of those of us who have made it to the other side and do not conclude their lives so early, in hopes that they will enrich all of our lives for many years to come. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is George Colvin. I was born and raised in Northern California, an LDS family, the fifth of six children. I wanted to serve a mission badly. I was a true believing Mormon, and then I came out, and I didn't serve a mission. About a year after that, I moved to Portland, Oregon. A few months of church activity taught me that I really couldn't have what I wanted in church, which was a ceiling to a righteous and worthy man. So I went inactive, and about that time I joined Affirmation. Somewhere around there, my home teacher stopped by and asked me why I hadn't been at church in a while, so I said, "Have a seat." And a few months later, I was excommunicated. For the last 2 years, I was co-director of the Portland chapter, though I have recently moved to San Francisco and had to end my service there. Since February, I have been director of the Young Adults Program. Meanwhile, I'm working on ways to reinvigorate the San Francisco chapter. As a note, my own spirituality is certainly based on church teachings, but is not limited to or even entirely encompassing of them. The YA program is geared toward 18 to 30-year-olds, and it formed when, after our last conference in Washington, D.C., the last Affirmation Conference, when several of us here at this table even, met to determine what Affirmation could do to better serve young adults. The executive committee got word of it and actually did something about it. We're very pleased. We're trying to find ways in which we can serve other young adults better. We're looking to create an empowering environment within Affirmation that speaks to the young adult experience. This programming begins, I think, officially Monday night when we host an event here in Salt Lake City. If you're interested, please see me after the panel. We will also include special programming at conferences, outreach and support, and a special young adult-centric retreat next summer. Young adults stand apart from the previous generations who have been in Affirmation. The older generations often served missions, got married and had children before coming out. My generation and the generation coming up behind me more often come out before a mission is an opportunity and never serve. I've always believed that a mission is an essential rite of passage in Mormon culture. So I have to wonder, what, without serving mission, without forming a traditional family, preserves that Mormon identity for gay young adults? Without those experiences, how does a young gay Mormon stay Mormon? Between my own casual research, I think it's hard and often undesirable for young gay saints to maintain their Mormon identity. I'll give you some examples from personal friends. They are all in their 20s. Most of them know each other. None, unfortunately, are women, which I think is a big disservice to what we're trying to do, but we're working on it. I've replaced all the names with pseudonyms to protect some anonymity. And though my sampling is small and limited, I've tried to balance it out of the experience I have seen over my years of conversation. I've also tried to preserve the language they used with me as carefully as possible. Grant, who's 21, came from a large LDS family. He came out during his last year of high school. His orientation was a catalyst for questioning church teachings. In his own opinion, God says nothing negative about same-gender attraction. Only church leaders do. And he felt that he had no need for a church that had negative things to say about him. His current spirituality borrows many sources, some Mormon, many not, and he believes it is intensely personal. Brian, who is 25, is a returned missionary and a former BYU Hawaii student. He left BYU largely because of BYU's expectations. He felt that because he wasn't meeting the expectation to marry a young, worthy girl, that he was a failure. In his own words, BYU makes you feel deficient because you're supposed to get married. after a bit more than a year of church inactivity, he is no longer bitter toward God or the church. Again, his own words. I don't think I'll be judged harshly for my relationship with my partner. Roy is 28, and now more active in the church than he has been after moving to a new area. He feels that the Spirit has led him back to church activity. He's in love with his new young single adult sport. He feels that it is more about spiritual growth than his last sport. He is pursuing the other side of his sexuality. He considers himself, I believe, bisexual, and is contemplating sealing to a woman and having children. He sees his orientation as a blessing, and he no longer allows the chastisement of other church members to interfere with his relationship with God. Brendan is 28. He is very active. He attends all his church meetings. He knows the church is true. He has feelings he wants to do more with. He believes his attractions are counter to church teachings. He does not believe there is a way to reconcile that. He is afraid of losing family and church relationships if he comes out. He would like the church's position to change, but he doesn't believe it ever will. To bring this together, the spiritual experience among young gay Mormons is fairly different. I believe that all young adults like me go through a period of wanting to have both their Mormon identity and their sexual identity at the same time without any trouble. I believe that in affirmation it is our duty to affirm every individual's choice in spiritual expression. I don't want anyone to have to choose between being true to their faith and true to themselves. I believe that it can and should be possible to be openly gay and openly Mormon. My own work in affirmation, I've found, is to build a dialogue. I want to make the possibility of being openly gay and openly Mormon an honest and fair discussion with church members and with general authorities. This is the work I think we need to do in affirmation. I think it is our responsibility to promote this dialogue, to not judge each other, to love each other. Thank you.
Hi, my name's David Nielsen. Can you hear me? And I'm here to tell you today about the experience of being actively gay and actively Mormon. To dream the impossible dream. And I'd like to illustrate for you how different it is now from how it was, say, 5 or 10 years ago. Let me tell you a little about myself. I was born in the Covenant and raised in Salt Lake City. I'm the president of LDS Reconciliation, which is a gay-positive, LDS-positive, home-evening-style meeting group, which is how I landed this gig. My parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents were all LDS, and I have ancestors who were among the first Mormons in this valley. And I'm gay, and I have never really been able to hide it, and I came out pretty early. So I have lots of experiences with how it is to be gay and young and Mormon and how we get treated in the church. When I was 14, I had a ponytail, and I remember one Wednesday night when some of the young men in the ward thought it would be a good idea to chase me around the church with a pair of scissors to cut my hair off. That was fun. I'm sorry, what?
It didn't happen.
No. This was intentional. When I was a priest, one Sunday we had kind of an argument in the priest quorum about homosexuality, after which one of the advisors pulled me aside and told me a story about his nephew. In his words, not mine, he said that his nephew had started out being sympathetic to the gay cause and over time had been seduced and recruited by them and had quit the church and moved to San Francisco and now was dying of AIDS. And what I heard was, I hate you and I think you're evil and I'm scared that you're going to try to recruit my sons. The most painful experience I had was when I was 20 and decided that I wanted to go on a mission and I wasn't permitted to go. And after a couple of weeks of dealing with the shock of that, I remember sitting down and making a list of reasons to continue living and reasons to not continue living. I decided to continue living. it was kind of a narrow margin at the time, but it's gotten wider as time's gone on. These are just a few of the experiences that I have, and I don't say them to set myself up as a victim or to blame anybody, just to illustrate how it was for me growing up. After a while, I decided that enough was enough, and I stopped going to church altogether and started exploring my spiritual pathway on my own. And what I found out in exploring my own spirituality is that being Mormon is a... Can I use the term core characteristic?
Sure.
Okay. It's a core part of who I am. The rest of you can look it up when you get home. After a year of inactivity, I went back to church. I had a few false starts in a student ward and had a realization that the thing that I always wanted at church and never had was someone to stand up for me. There were lots of people who would look back at what had happened to me and say, that shouldn't have happened. But there was never anyone who would stand up in the moment and say, no, you can't do that to David, that's wrong. And I realized, that's never going to happen. There's never going to be anybody who will stand up in the moment. And that's okay, and it's not a good reason to not go to church. So I started going back to my home ward, a ward that I said I would never, ever go back to. And the first week that I went back, I sat next to the same guy in Sunday school who had told me the story about his nephew, I guess, 8 years earlier. And during Sunday school class, while the class was going on, he asked me how I was doing and where am I working and am I going to school, and gave me a great recipe for stuffed pork chops. I'm not kidding. His family was there, and he had his 9-month-old grandson there bouncing on his knee in the Sunday school class. And I looked at him, and I looked at the kid, and I realized that the experience I'd had, or the story that I'd made up about him, wasn't the truth. He doesn't hate me. He doesn't think I'm evil. He isn't scared of me. But in his mind, because of what happened with his nephew, he equates being gay with going away. And what he wants more than anything is just to have people around to hang out with and have fun with. And he didn't want what happened to his nephew to happen to me. So there's an opportunity here for me to be an example and say, no, 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 we don't all get AIDS and die. We don't all quit the church and move away. It was a really touching experience for me because it showed that, you know, at our core, we really are all about love, and sometimes we just get confused about how to best express it. That's kind of a really short synopsis of my perception of how things are different now from how they were 10 years ago or so. And I have lots of other experiences, but we don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to share that one. I am hopeful that as time goes on, things will continue to shift, both within our perception of the way things are and in the way things actually are and the way we're treated at church. And I love what George said. We shouldn't have to choose between our faith and our sexuality. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Some of you may have heard that we had something else to do while we were in town this weekend. There was a meeting with some people from the church next Monday. I think it had a line or two in the paper somewhere back. You may also have heard that about 18 days ago, the church announced that they weren't going to be able to attend the meeting, that they needed to postpone it indefinitely. We asked them what indefinitely meant. They said 2009. But we're here. Unlike a certain, or very similar to a Salt Lake-based organization you might be familiar with, we have no paid leadership. You know, we all have day jobs. We travel our own expense. So we're here in town, and we're going to be at the meeting Monday morning. There may or may not be anyone from the church show up. There might be someone from the press show up. And we intend to go over everything that we originally planned to go over in this meeting. We've also asked the church to reschedule the meeting sooner, to schedule with the general authority of the church. Now, we've had some questions from people on that. Some of them ask, you know, why the big media campaign? Okay, why does the press even have to be involved in this? And kind of reminded of the old story. You might have heard this about the farmer. And he was starting to, advance. He needed some help at the farm. He needed a mule. So he found this old-timer that had a mule that he was selling. And he said, well, you know, is this going to be a good mule for me? And the old-timer said, this mule will work hard, do anything that you need done. You know, it's a great mule. So, you know, they settled on a deal, exchange hands. And I went to take the mule home, and the mule just stopped, wouldn't move. And no matter what he did, he couldn't do anything. And finally went back to the old-timer and said, hey, you told me this mule would do anything that I needed. I can't even get the thing to move. And the old farmer comes out and looks at the mule, looks down on the ground, picks up this 2x4, gets back with the mule, and just wails this mule across the head. The mule starts moving. He said, well, what in the world did you do that for? He said, the mule's fine. You just got to get its attention first. President Monson is a very, very good man. You can't pick up the phone and just call him, though. Okay, sometimes you got to get their attention. Okay, which is kind of what we're doing here. Media has played a significant role in the history of affirmation. That's how much of affirmation got started, was through articles in the media. We're using the media to motivate church leaders to get our message through to the First Presidency, where they actually pay attention. When we sent the invitation to President Monson back in February, we sent it off, and nothing happened. And a good reporter got a hold of the story and ran it. And from what I understand, that Friday night, there were about six people in the church mailroom, had to put in about 4 or 5 hours of overtime because someone wanted to know where that letter was. So it sometimes works. We want to use the media to educate people, to let them know about the situation, to let them know what it is we're actually trying to do in all of this. When the church does things right, as they've approved their stance on homosexuality and on gays, we want to praise the church for what they do. At the same time, we also want to hold them accountable when they do things that are not right and not in accordance with the teaching of the Savior. We believe that we can work together with the church to resolve some serious problems that exist in our world. In Utah, in the Intermountain West and the Northwest, there is a huge problem with homeless teenagers. Okay, you can find them sleeping under overpasses. You can find them in shelters. You can find them selling their bodies on the streets. And when you do the research, you find that some of them are there because of drugs and some of them are because of other problems. In this area, though, the majority of them are there because they were kicked out of LDS families, loving families, because someone told them you shouldn't have your gay child around your other children. Utah has one of the highest suicide rates in the world. And when you go and run the stats on that, a lot of it is because of gay Latter-day Saints who just can't deal with the pressure that they've been put under by loving members of the church. There are thousands of broken families throughout the church. Someone had a problem, they went to their bishop and said, Bishop, I think I'm gay. Bishop had the cure. Go off and get married, have a family. You'll be fixed. So they did. They found a worthy person, soulmate, took them to the temple. They had 4 or 5 kids, and after about 15 years, they figured out the bishop was wrong. It didn't work, and they have to sit down and tell the kids what's going on. The damage occurs not only to the gay church member, but to their family members, to their friends, to others in the church. This needs to end, and it needs to end now. There's one study that was done that shows that there is at least one gay closeted parent in every single LDS ward in the state of Utah. The problem is that widespread. And I have other notes here I can't read. Mormons are into genealogy. If you take your family group sheet and you take any 3 consecutive generations, you take parents, their children, and their siblings, somewhere in those 3 generations there's at least one gay person. Okay, so this is not a problem that affects someone else. we're asking the church to become more Christ-like, to meet with us, to work together to find a way to educate church leaders, to educate families, to find solutions to these problems. There's a line from an old affirmation brochure from probably 20 years ago that asks why affirmation is needed, and it says as long as we teach hatred and homophobia as family values, affirmation is needed. We're inviting Thomas Monson to meet with us to sit down to help us solve problems that exist between certain of God's children, to make the church Christ-like, to work together to resolve these problems. We can do this without changing church doctrine, and if we do it, we will save lives, we will change lives. You heard some stories tonight about good people who aren't in the church anymore. Some of them gay, some of them not gay. In my own home where I come from, we have a state president. We have an alumni of the Tabernacle Choir. We have someone who was a bishop when they left. They're no longer members of the church because of the way that the church has treated their gay family members or people that they know. We can solve the problem. The time to do it is now. Thank you.
We've reached that point where we can ask, have some questions or comments from the audience. I would ask that if you have questions or comments, please step to the microphone, as Mike Green is now doing. And when you want to address it, because there's a panel here, you may address your question to a specific member of the panel you wish to answer the question. Or if you just have a general question, then I'm going to see who the Spirit moves to answer that question. All right, so Mike.
I may be of the middle generation. However, 10 years ago when I came out, I was excommunicated, and I considered myself to be in the rising spiritual generation for the last 10 years. Specifically, for the past 3 years, I've been going to church, or I couldn't before. So my question to the panel is my experience in going to church, specifically now I've been going to Catholic Church and most recently to Methodist Church, that, I mean, initially when I was early on coming out, I couldn't go to Protestant churches or anything, and I discovered the reason why was because that the form of worship for Mormons is different than the rest of the Protestant world as Christians. And so my question to the panel is that as I have experienced worship in the Mormon church as individuals, it's about me sitting in the pew having this individual experience with the Savior and taking the sacrament, whereas my Protestant Catholic experience has been an experience as a community of faith, that I go up with the congregation, I worship with the congregation. There's a different tone of worship that I have suddenly found that has been very helpful. So I'm curious, maybe one person from the middle generation, one from the younger generation, to talk about how worship is impacting your life, as it is doing now for me.
Well, since Mike asked for a respondent from both of the generations, I'll respond as the older generation. I find that I too sought other forms of spirituality when I felt that I couldn't be active in Mormonism. And somehow nothing seemed to be right, sort of as you experienced. I didn't find anything to be quite the same. Since I initially went inactive over the gay issue, I have twice tried to become reactivated in the church. The first time after the death of my first partner due to illness. And if we had another session, I could tell you a lot about that. It was an amazing set of circumstances. After 7 years of having not been active in the church, having moved, but you know how the records do eventually follow you. And I was in the lowest point of my life after the death of a very, very dear partner, that one I love deeply. And in a period of a week, in the midst of this period, I received a call from the bishop of my ward that my records had been transferred to, who had no idea who I was. It just got the records and wanted to interview me. because I was inactive, a home teacher came by, and the missionary showed up at the door, all in the same week. Now, I'm not a particularly superstitious person, but I thought this might be a sign. And everyone was incredibly nice and considerate, and I told them, everyone, the gospel truth of exactly what was happening in my life. And tried for 3 months to be active again. And everyone tried very hard to be nice to me, but I just didn't fit in. There was no place for me. And I simply have not found the ability to worship in other faith traditions. I tell you, after this Sunstone Symposium, I'm thinking about the community of Christ after hearing people like Susan Skor speak. It's most amazing what they're doing. But I probably have about the same experience as you as the answer to your question. Now, would one of the younger generation want to...
After I decided to go inactive, that following Christmas, I returned for the Christmas ward meeting that we had on the insistence of my mom. And she really wanted me to go, and she's really, really good with that guilt stuff. So I went, and I felt out of place. And it wasn't due to anybody being unfriendly or unwelcoming to me. But it just wasn't, it didn't feel right any longer. And I don't know if that was that mental or emotional shutdown of going to church at a Mormon worship service after that, or what it was. After I had experienced that, I decided that I wasn't going to try to go active again. And I had searched out other churches. The first one was MCC in Denver. And if you want to talk about a polar opposite of what Mormon church service is like, go to this MCC church in the Rockies. T-shirt, shorts, flip-flops, and dancing in the aisles. It was very, very different. And I tried it out. I stuck it out because I thought, well, this is where my newfound gay friends and great gay Christians are going to go. And it just, I got tired of it. It just wasn't for me. And it was just a matter of trying it out. And eventually I found the Episcopal Church. There's a couple in Denver that are extraordinarily gay-friendly, and so I decided to go there. And I think the reason I chose that personally was because the style of worship was fairly traditional, although the incense is new, the chanting was new. Yeah. it satisfied a part of what I was used to with the Mormon Church, and that was the traditionalism, the choir, the organ, the music, the way that they studied the scriptures, and for me, that's what I chose. For some, it doesn't work. You know, it's a matter of just finding that personal perspective. Like David Nielsen has found a way to be active in the Mormon Church and deal with his sexuality, and it's working for him. And so, it's perfect for him, but it does not always work for everybody coming up into the younger generation. And I think it's important to note that the youth that are coming out this day and age are not putting as much weight on spirituality as perhaps some of us are. They don't feel it as important, and so perhaps it's easier for them to walk away from church, religion, God, etc., whereas for some of us it's not that simple. So I think it's a very personal journey, and to anyone who's trying to find that, just to keep trying. There's no harm in going and trying another church. So.
Any other questions? I say any other questions? That's all I'm saying. Well, okay.
I just have a comment. My name is Austin. I'm a psychologist. I was one of those young students shocking gay people under Eugene Thorne. A couple of points of clarification. There was many more than 16. We don't know how many committed suicide, but one of mine did. Another point, when Spencer W. Kimball interviewed gay people in the church, he excommunicated the bottoms and disfellowshipped the tops. I think the LDS Church is toxic to our young men, and I have no hope except that maybe we can help them. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Excuse me one second. I was trying to get people in the order they stood up. Did you have a question, sir?
No.
I was going to try to impose some sequence, and then are all you waiting for questions right here?
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir, and then we'll go to you, and then.
Yeah, in 1990, I learned a word that changed my life, and I incorporated it into some work that I do, dream work. and the word is be loving. Now, and I want to just share that with you, that the word is defined as spending time with someone in such a way that that someone experiences his or her own beauty. Now, it's the other person's experience that's important here. It's your own. Now, and the opposite of beloving is power tripping. And if you... Now, I was shocked. That word convicted me powerfully because I had been for years loving and not beloving, thinking that I was doing the right thing. It was wonderful conviction, but it's very painful to see that. But I realized that in the LDS society, and I gave a workshop about 3 years ago here where I introduced that word in dreams to see how you behave in your dreams, how your dream self is interacting with those characters in your dreams. And not one of 16 members of the workshop could say yes, they are beloved in their dreams. It was a big shock. It was a surprise to me. But so that concept doesn't seem to be very much alive in this society. And so I'm encouraging you. If the place to start is here, with yourself and with those that you interact with. And don't worry about power tripping others.
Thank you for your comments. Am I sorry?
I have two questions. It strikes me that there are no females up here. And I was wondering if their experience is so different that it has to be separated at all times or not. And the second one is, if you have a spouse, whether they be male or female, what would be the loving, Christ-like thing to do when your spouse comes out to you? And do you stay in the marriage? Do you think that the spouse wants to stay in the marriage? Or that, you know, how does that impact a Mormon family? I mean, like, just between the two of them, is it... It's a long subject.
Well, let me address the first question, since I've been executive director for a long time. There are not a lot of women in affirmation. There are some. Yes, their experience is dramatically different than men in the church because it's a patriarchal type of society. The church puts a lot more attention on gay men in the church than they do on lesbian women. And typically, my experience has been when the lesbians leave, when they realize they're lesbian, they decide they don't want to have anything to do with Mormonism. Also, they don't want to have anything to do with men because the church and men are so intricately tied together. And whereas, Paul Mortensen likes to call us girls, we're not. And we are men, and I think that there's a little bit of that. But there are some exceptions, although there's just none of them here this afternoon. But yes, it's very, very different, and we would be very glad to see more women in the church. As to your second question, I don't know if anyone has a strong feeling on that one. I'll let Dave answer that one then.
In most cases, not all, but in most cases, when a gay person gets married, they usually know that they're gay, or at least have a strong suspicion. Sometimes that's discussed with their fiancé beforehand, sometimes not. As you go through years, your spouse, regardless of your sexuality, usually becomes your best friend, your confidant, the one that you work with. And when you come out and you say, this isn't working, I'm gay, I need to be with someone that's gay, it has a devastating effect. Now, I've seen some marriages where the two of them stay together, and you know they may have separate sexual lives, but they work together to try and make it happen. I've seen others where the split is immediate, and they never do get back together. I've seen everything in between. no matter what you do, it's always going to be damaging on the children because it just doesn't make sense. And when you go back, you get in the situation, how much of the relationship was real? How much of it was a lie? There are very real problems. Each one is individual. But if the pressure was not on there from the beginning, to seek marriage as a cure for being gay, then a lot of that never comes up. I'm not answering your question, obviously, by the look on your face.
You're so perceptive.
Well, I'm wondering how it impacts the spirituality of each individual, each partner, and if they want to be Christ-like. Suppose they have children. Mm-hmm.
Christ-like says that we work together, we love each other, and we move forward on the problem. Human nature says, when we screw up, we've got to find someone to blame. Very often, that blame will go back on a bishop or on a church leader or on a belief system. And that's kind of the way we react initially. And then we kind of move through that phase. And then we go on to the real reason why it happened and kind of reconcile with the higher reason. So I've seen a lot of people who get into that situation. They become very bitter towards the church, want nothing to do with spirituality. As they work through the things that are about, because coming out psychologically can be a very traumatic process. Okay, when you're in a marriage and that's involved, you have years and years and years that you might be pondering all this and thinking your way through it and working out the problems, and you lay this on your spouse in about 20 minutes. Okay, and so you get this very conflicted situation. And like I said, everyone is different, but a typical situation would be someone that loses their spirituality for a period, they want absolutely nothing to do with the church, and then as they work out the other issues, they pick up pieces of their spirituality. Some of them will eventually come back into the church. Some of them, they just feel the damage was so great, or they're uncomfortable enough, or they feel unsafe enough. They never go back. So there's not an easy answer for that.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, go ahead, Clark. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to stop you. Go ahead. No. I was just going to get straight. Matter. Are you waiting? Also, Gary, Gary, and then we'll go Gary next, and then ma'am. Did you want to have a comment? Okay, so we'll go Clark, then Gary, and then you. Okay, just want to keep some order here.
Two questions, George. I believe you mentioned that we're seeing less people go on missions as a result of coming out earlier. In my experience, I often look to my mission as what will cure me and fix me. I'm curious what the undertow is that's causing people to not go on missions. And then the second question is, I'm curious, Proposition A, what's affirmation doing to energize, conversely to the church's effort? For those of us in California, how can we help energize that?
So the first part, how is coming out affecting missionary service? I think in most cases they're like... the young man who came out in the last year of high school, who, after coming out, started looking at the church a bit more objectively. He saw one big personal conflict, and then started looking at the whole. So I think most who come out before missionary service begin to wonder, what is the right thing to do? Even after coming out, I still wanted to go on a mission, but various personal circumstances prevented that. If those hadn't been the case, I probably would have served, and who knows how that would have turned out. I don't think it would have fixed me. As for your second question, I think I forgot it.
How can affirmation energize the
opposition? What's affirmation doing in California to energize similar to what the church is doing around Prop 8?
That I don't think I have the answer for.
Well, let me take
that. Well, let me address that. Obviously, affirmation... it probably has as many dues-paying members as one large ward of the church, and our mailing lists are about probably smaller than a lot of stakes. But we are trying our best to just advertise the fact that this issue exists and hope that people will vote their conscience. Certainly our members in California need no reminder of this. Members of Affirmation who are getting married, we're doing in California, members of are in California, their marriages are being... advertised, and very often, like for instance, some friends of mine, Ben and Pat, were married, and they in their wedding invitation they said, in lieu of gifts, please send donations to Equality California and the other organization that's fighting against that. And so, things like that are happening. And also, we're trying to, Dave's doing his best to make things known to the media. We're doing our best to make, statements that we can to illustrate that this is not the correct way for the church. But there's, other than just consciousness raising, there's not really a whole lot more we can do. But I think there's a lot of that we can do and we're doing. Okay, Gary? Yeah.
Maybe the heat of the room has tapped my mind here. Maybe go whack off. But as I was in the back, I was thinking about a meeting that we had in our home several years ago that was on a Sunday evening after the Department of Family Services of the state had made a decision that gay people could not adopt. And I think it was by 7-2 vote or something like that. And we had about 25 gay and lesbian people in our home, and I asked the people how they felt about that. And I just remember, and it's because it always kind of struck me, how everybody sort of shrugged their shoulders and said, what would you expect? This is exactly what we would anticipate. And I was thinking about how, in some ways, it was one more humiliation heaped on so many humiliations in the state and in the church and in the culture. And I got thinking about this business about meeting with the brethren in the church. But I somehow think we've got it backwards. Because in my view, the church ought to be calling affirmation to meet with you and apologize for the way they've treated our gay and lesbian
folks. Thank you for the comments, Gary. We are almost out of time, so this young lady will be the last person and before we close officially.
Well, I had a comment about a previous question and also a question for the panel in general. When I've been to gay affirmative spiritual meetings such as Reconciliation Affirmation, there's been maybe one other female there. But when I went to Evergreen's women's meeting, it was just me and the person leading the meeting, and I said, surely I'm not the only person experiencing same gender attraction. And she said basically they're outliving the lifestyle. That's why they're not here. And my question is Child Protective Services involved in these cases where, because the statistic I heard is that 80% of homeless juveniles in the state are homosexual. And so I'm wondering if Child Protective Services is involved and if they're placing these people in foster homes or if they're just choosing to live on the street somewhere.
You want to answer that? That's
really awesome. In many cases, Protective Services is involved. In many more, it is not. Their resources are limited. A 16-year-old that's just been thrown out of his home usually doesn't know there is such a thing as Child Protective Services. They work to survive. They're embarrassed. They want to get out of the area where their peer group is, and so they get into unfamiliar areas, and there's a migration among homeless, including homeless teenagers, from city to city. They'll thumb their way around. Going back to Olin's comments on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you remember that until you solve that first level, food, shelter, survival, you can't begin to move to the second level. These kids are working day-to-day on survival, so they fall between the cracks a lot of times. There are a number of good agencies that are working with them, but usually if you can get much more than a cot to sleep on a bed, you're doing good. In terms of placing them in homes or adoption, if you've ever worked with kids and this sort of thing, it is very, very difficult to place a 16 or a 17-year-old. And at 18, the system, particularly in government with the financial support, says that's an adult. And so the system will throw them back out on the street a second time. That's a situation there. One comment on what Gary had said before we finished. Olin's staring at me, but he kind of reminds me of my favorite apostle, is Hubie Brown. And you might remember his last general conference address before he passed on, and he said, President Hinckley's pulling on my pants leg. He's trying to tell me it's time to sit down and shut up. I've got some more things I want to say. And then he went on for another 20 minutes. I'm not going to do that to you. And now I don't remember what it was I was going to make the point on him.
That serves you right.
Yeah, probably to, well, one of the things in our approach to the church is to just set aside past things. Yeah, they should apologize, and yeah, the world should be a better place, and I should have this gorgeous man wanting to rush me off to the temple. But, you know, sometimes those things don't happen the way they should. You can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. Our approach to the church is, you know, one of the things that we would present to President Monson is whatever is in the past is in the past. We have problems. If we work together, we can solve some of those problems. We want to move forward without recrimination. I think that's probably the way the Savior would do it. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for coming this afternoon. I want to thank you for your support of Affirmation, and if you have not been supporting Affirmation, I invite you to learn more about us and to help, and certainly to keep an open mind, and I'm sure most people here at Sunstone do have open minds. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but please feel free to hang around, ask us any questions individually if your questions were not answered. And a very big thank you to our fellow members, my fellow members of the panel, and to your presence. So have a good day.